Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for the Social Hour is brought to you by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is The Social Hour, episode 12 with Sarah Lane and Amber MacArthur, recorded Monday, June 13th, 2011. This episode of The Social Hour is brought to you by Squarespace.com, the fast and easy way to create a high-quality website or blog. For a free 14-day trial, go to squarespace.com/socialhour and be sure to check out their annual plans of savings to up to 20% off. And by FreshBooks, the easy online invoicing service that gets you paid quickly and makes you look professional. Get started with a free package at FreshBooks.com. And by Netflix, watch thousands of TV episodes and movies streamed to your PC, Mac, or TV instantly. Plus, get DVDs by mail in about one business day. For your free 30-day trial, go to Netflix.com/TWiT. Hey, everybody, and welcome to episode 12 of The Social Hour from Petaluma, California. I'm Sarah Lane.
And I'm Amber MacArthur from Toronto, Ontario, Canada.
Amber, good to see you. I know you spoke at a conference this morning and you rushed home to make it home for the show. So thanks for being here. As usual,
no problem.
It's down to the wire with us.
Always. You know what, though? It's fun. So I spent most of my morning with people who specialize in search, who are learning more about social media at the SDS conference. So it was very interesting because I think people who are into search engine optimization are trying to learn more about social media and vice versa. So a really cool group of people and hopefully taught them a thing or two. But so I'm ready, Sarah, for an hour or close to an hour of social media. Goodness.
You know, the term social or search engine optimization or SEO is a bad word or a bad acronym, I guess, to some people. And other people think it's very valuable. Where do you stand on the line?
Well, I think there's elements of it, of course, that really can be useful for companies understanding how to get higher up in search. And I think combined with a really strong social media strategy, that it can be a really great solution. But I agree with you. I mean, I'm obviously more on the social media side of things and think it's a stronger, more authentic way to actually help you work up the ranks in Google and in search in general. But I think there's a lot that SEO people know that social media people don't know that could be helpful in understanding kind of the fine art behind search and how it works and how what they've been doing for years to get better results in search engines.
Absolutely. Well, Amber, our first guest today, or our only guest actually, who might know a thing or two about this sort of stuff, is somebody that you're a fan of.
Yes, super excited to have Kate from the UK, Kate Russell from BBC's Click on the show. And I've been a fan of Click for quite some time now. When I started in television, Kate was one of those people I always looked at and I would watch the show all the time and she always had such great picks. So it wasn't until Stephen on Twitter recommended that we have her on the show that it just seemed like a no-brainer. I'm surprised I never thought of it before. And she's going to join us now on Skype to talk a little bit about some of her favorite social media sites and hopefully what's going on in the UK on the social side.
Hey, Kate. Kate is BBC Click's website diva. I love that name. That's a great title.
I am. Well, I'm pretty much the only girl who's regularly in the office. So the boys do call me a bit of a diva when I'm there. But it's all in good fun, I hope.
Very cool. So, Kate, tell us a little bit how you got into the technology scene and what your background is a little bit, just for our listeners and viewers who haven't seen your show before.
Well, I actually got into technology in 1979 when I was 11 years old. And yes, I'm 43. And it was Elite, the brilliant game on the BBC Micro. And pretty much I wanted to annoy my brother, who was 2 years older than me, who the game was his, the computer was his. I had a Barbie doll and stable. He had a BBC Micro and an Elite to play with. So it's kind of like, I thought I had a good deal at the time, but then when I got into Elite and started realizing that inside this sort of box on the desk was this just amazing world without boundaries. I remember flying the spaceship in one direction for 3 hours one day, which at age 11 is a long time. It's nearly a month. And I didn't find the end of it. And I think it was, I don't want to say epiphany because that makes me sound a little bit pretentious, but you know, it was a real moment of wow, what is this and what can I do with it? And it's just never really looked back from there.
So, Kate, I know that you, perusing your website, you have a great bio. It sounds like you held many hats before you sort of settled into being an online personality. How did you make the transition from someone who obviously cared about tech from a very young age to somebody who was actually living and breathing it as a career?
Well, truth be told, it was a dare. I was working at one of the first CD manufacturing plants. So I'd loved getting inside the technology, but I didn't handle education very well. So couldn't really do regular routes into journalism and the work that I wanted to do. So I just knocked around doing a few jobs and eventually was managing a sales team that had CD manufacturing, and we were producing games. And one of my customers saw an advert for Yorkshire Television for Nickelodeon looking for a young and funky female presenter to front a new programme about games. And on a £50 dare, I applied for the job. And I think because I really genuinely love technology and I wasn't there because I wanted to be on television, that's pretty much what I've based my television career on, which is that I just want to tell stories. You know, I want to tell people about the cool stuff that I find. And it's not about being in front of the camera. It's much more about sharing stories and experience. So, and that's hopefully what I achieve.
Now, since this is called the Social Hour, I'm just curious in terms of your opinion on the social scene right now, all the new tools and sites. You've been focused mainly over the past few years on kind of talking about really neat websites. But how has social media kind of played into your evolving role as one of the contributors to Click?
Well, Click, I've actually been working for Click for 8 years as a reporter, but after 2 years, I started doing their website review section. So I've been doing it for 6 years now, and that's pulling up four great websites that are BBC friendly, so, you know, family friendly, mostly free, not highly commercial, for 6 years. And as you can imagine, the landscape of the internet has just changed immeasurably in those 6 years. It's a bit like living a whole new lifetime, you know, from start to finish. So I've seen the social space evolve. You know, I've been with Twitter from the beginning. I, you know, reviewed it, I think, a year after it started to come out. And everybody was like, yeah, don't get it. 140 characters, hey, what? You know, and today I still get people saying, I don't get Twitter. What's the point of Twitter? And I think the biggest point I can say about Twitter and other various different social networking sites that are growing around it is the value of Twitter is in who you follow, not in who you know, just if you just follow everybody and there's no kind of quality control over the streams that are coming into you, then you're going to find it hard to see Twitter as anything other than just a tool for connecting with people that you know. And let's face it, do we really need that many more of those these days? The market is absolutely flooded. So I think when you're looking at the new social apps and tools that are coming out, the social networks, they need an angle. They need to do something that the other sites don't do. And I'm not just talking about, you know, a nice interface or, you know, technical functionality. They need to offer you a fundamental emotion, if you like, that you don't get anywhere else. And I get two or three a week suggested to me, we've set up this great new social network. And it's just like, well, what does it do that the other social networks don't do? All you're trying to do is grab a piece of an already existing satisfied customer base. So you've got to do something new to stand out. And just because it's got a social tag on it and it's using all the latest bells and whistles like geolocation and blah-de-blah-de-blah, social recommendations, doesn't make it a good thing. You know, the ultimate thing about a social site or a social tool is it needs a critical mass. And if your critical mass is already quite happy somewhere else, then you're not going to succeed in this field.
Kate, I'm looking at your Twitter page right now, and I notice you've got a lot of followers. You're following 144 people, so that's less than me and a lot less than Amber. And Amber and I have had this discussion on the show in the past where Amber says, well, you know, that I follow a lot of folks and I've kind of gotten good at blowing past certain tweets and other tweets that are relevant to me kind of stand out more. I have more of a problem with that. I have to follow fewer folks to not get overwhelmed. How do you set up your Twitter strategy? Because it sounds like something that you've thought about a lot, and you're not following that many people in terms of how many people are following you. Is that to keep the noise down?
No, to be honest with you, with 143 people following, the noise is still unmanageable, you know, especially when you're following people like Guy Kawasaki. You know, I mean, on his own, he's a maelstrom of noise and links. So I find the content that I want from the people that I follow by setting up groups for myself. Mm-hmm. So if I'm looking for this week's trending topic, you know, I've got organized into a group the people that I follow that I know will tweet good stuff about that. But for me, and I have given this quite a lot of thought, some might say a little too much thought. For me, when I see somebody that I like the tweets and I go to their Twitter page, if they're following the same number, you know, they're following 5,000 people and they've got 5,000 people following them, I don't even bother to look at who they're following. But if there's a large difference, i.e. they've got 5,000 people following them, but they're only following 50 people, then that to me tells me that there is something valuable in the list of people that they're following. So I will go and have a look at their list. So I like to think that the people that I follow, and people ask me all the time, what have I got to do to get you to follow me? Well, you've got to tweet interesting stuff. Mm-hmm. Because then I know that the people who visit my page on Twitter, if they want to find more of the kind of thing that I like, then they can find it quite easily by visiting the people that I follow. Does that make sense? So it's kind of like social totally recommendation sense. Within Twitter as well.
Unofficial. So I'm just curious. I mean, I'm imagining that obviously, you know, Facebook, Twitter, obviously, and some other social sites are popular in the UK. But is there anything else that is popular in the social space or in the web space in your part of the world that maybe we don't know about or is kind of rising up the ranks? Is there anything you can share with us on that front? I hate to put you on the spot, but just out of curiosity.
Yeah, no, well, I mean, I quite like this kind of, there's a lot of going back to basic stuff, like, one particular app that I call to mind just off the top of my head is Love.Fresh. I think it's lovefr.sh or something. It's Love Fresh. And it basically is an app that allows you to find local produce. And it's, you know, been started in the UK. And I think, you know, really with the sort of the way that the UK is set up with these small hamlets and towns and you've got farmers markets and things like that. And so if you want to find good, fresh, organic food to buy, you can search by, you know, what type of food group you want, or you can search by location if you want to go and visit a cafe. So these kind of apps, I think now, which are much more local community building apps, they do well in the UK. I have to say, though, when I'm reviewing stuff for Click, I am constantly having to bite my bottom lip as I pass over the great, especially location-based apps that you've got in America, which haven't got to us yet. And I guess because you've got the critical mass of connected people, you know, for it to be a much more financially rewarding venture for any new company. And then eventually, you know, we get the dregs coming over here or we get the successful ventures coming over here. But it's actually the other way around. I quite often see stuff that you've got that isn't going to get to me for 6 months and I can't cover it on Click yet. And it's just like, argh.
It's interesting to think, though, that depending on, I mean, your geolocation, your actual physical location can really make or break apps depending on where you are. Like you said, in the US, for example, something gets a lot of buzz, a lot of people get on board, and it can work really well. I mean, Foursquare is always a good example of a service that if you've got a lot of people around you that are using it and you're in a city where a lot of locations are a part of the service, it can be really fun. And if you're in a rural place and you don't have people connecting with you, it is super pointless. And I can see just, obviously the UK is very densely populated, but it's just a smaller place. And I can see adoptions happening differently, which is interesting.
It's also, I mean, there's a big thing about privacy. And I think perhaps, you know, in the UK, I don't know if our attitude towards our privacy is a bit different from over in America. I've spent some years in America, but not recently. So I don't know sort of if there's a new attitude forming around all of these location-based and sort of, you know, you're giving away information about yourself. And, oh, my cat's just come to say hi.
Yay!
you're giving away information about yourself. You're giving away your data. And unless you have a suitable reward, then she's going to jump off on the top of the desk now. Excuse me, any minute now.
And that's nice.
She sleeps out there all day. There needs to be sufficient reward for people to give away that freedom, if you want. And the reward... If the rewards aren't there, then people are, it's kind of a lose-lose situation, because you can't have one without the other, the chicken and the egg. And so you've got to get people to sign up for it in order for there to be enough reward for them to want to sign up for it. So people who make these products are in a really difficult position. And I think potentially, you know, in America, there's a slightly more open and entrepreneurial attitude towards giving away this data. I don't know. I could be wrong. I'm just, you know, this is just me talking off the top of my head now.
Yeah, no. I think that makes sense. I just have one other question for you. And this is based on a recent headline that I came across last week. And there's been many conversations about this topic, that the web is dead. You know, you hear people saying it all the time. The web's over. It's all about mobile or apps. And, you know, we don't really need to think about websites and, you know, HTTP protocol. What is your opinion on that, since you've really specialized in the web for a good chunk of time now?
Yeah, I don't think that will ever happen. There is always going to be, I'm working on a project at the moment called Between 3D, where we're looking at a lot of different future things, you know. So yeah, in the long, long distance future, when we've got augmented reality that is somehow embedded into our peripheral vision, then yes, maybe this is going to work. But at the end of the day, you are still, your mobile device currently is still a fixed handheld thing which is here, and you can do so much more with a desk. You know, you've got more sensory input, you can have your speakers on loud, you can and you can have a completely different and much more deep experience, I think, with a website than you can with a mobile phone. Because let's face it, if you're at home and you want to do some web surfing, you're not going to sit and web surf on your mobile phone. Equally, you're not going to put your desktop machine into your handbag and take it out into the street and try and find a connection to plug into, you know, in the middle of Oxford Street. So I think until the way that we interface with technology and the very nature of the technology itself changes radically, then there is always going to be both web and desktop-based connections.
I think that's true. Amber, I know we were going to talk about this concept on the show anyway, but it's interesting to hear points of view. And I feel like we're all kind of going to agree that there seem to be a group of people who are desperate to say the web is dead, we're moving on, because it's kind of exciting to think that they're ushering a new era of wearable computing and all that stuff. But it really seems like all we're getting is more choices. And why does anyone want to see one way of consuming the online experience go away just because now we've got phones that also are little computers?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, it may be one day sooner than perhaps than the future that I've just forecast. You know, you've got these now where you plug your phone into and it gives you a desktop type environment. You know, but that's still where are the boundaries of what we're saying here? Is it, you know, are we saying that we will only need, because the web over 3G is still the web at the end of the day? Yeah, you're still connected to the internet and you can still access things on the internet. So, you know, if you plug your phone into a machine that turns it into a desktop unit, then isn't that kind of the same as just being on a desktop unit?
Yeah, no, I think I agree with you guys. I mean, I don't think the web is dead at all. I mean, I think it's, but it is something that people like to kind of latch on to, and you know, it makes for a really good headline, right?
Yeah, exactly.
that's the big thing about it. Kate, so we should let you go because I know it's getting later over there. I just wanted to thank you so much for coming on the show, and for Stephen for recommending you a wonderful idea. Maybe you'll come back and join us again and give us some more commentary from over in your part of the world.
Absolutely. I'd love to anytime. Just let me know. It's been a real pleasure. Thank you, ladies.
A pleasure for us, too. That's Kate Russell. She is the, what was her?
Web diva.
Website diva and tech reporter for BBC Click. And of course, you can find her at Kate Russell on Twitter as well. She is, that's not the right website. Here's the website. That was our rundown. Amber, you know what? So I finally, while Kate was talking, I finally figured out Love Fresh that she was talking about. So it's L-O-V-E F-R-E.S-H. I have never heard of this before. Sounds like, at least for her, this was something that she had discovered, and it's at least taking off in her neck of the woods across the pond. I'm excited about it. I love the idea of getting the local produce delivered to my home. We've got some, we have some services that offer things like that, but I've definitely never heard of this one. Do you have a lot of that sort of thing going on in Toronto, especially app-based?
Not so much app-based. There is obviously a big movement here as far as farmers markets in the city, and also farmers coming into the city and offering up deals. You know, if you want to buy your meat from them for the winter, you can go and do that and, you know, fill up your freezer. So I see a movement kind of happening sort of at a grassroots level. As for an app to allow you to discover local organic food, no. But if I dig around a little bit more, and I'm sure in the coming months there will be such a thing, because it is such a popular trend. I mean, even in Toronto, I'm sure that I could hit a new farmer's market, not every weekend, but I could definitely do a good little tour and find some great locally produced food. Just in my neighborhood last weekend, a farmer's market opened up here, and it's wonderful. It's just fantastic. So hope that continues.
Absolutely. Well, if you're not familiar with the Social Hour, hopefully you're getting more familiar now. You know, Amber, I feel like we should have more guests like Kate, because Kate is such a... It's so easy to talk to her because she obviously is just like-minded. So it's fun to get the opinion of people that are similar to us as far as career paths go, but who also have just unique perspectives.
Definitely.
She's awesome. Yeah, I'm going to have to get more familiar with BBC Click. But if you're not familiar with the Social Hour, there are a lot of ways to follow us. If you're not watching us live, we do record on Mondays at 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern, or around thereabouts. But if you want to follow us on the web, it's twit.tv/TSH. That is our website where you can at least watch show archives. You know, if you ever miss our live show, we make sure that you don't have to miss it forever. They go up within about a day onto our website, sometimes less. You can download audio or video versions of the show. So if you're a commuter and you just want to listen as you go about your day, that's cool too. Our video version offers more visual stuff. You know, we'll have URLs and a little bit more information for you. And you can subscribe as well. You can subscribe to the audio or the video feed. Get that through iTunes, variety of ways. You know, if you're a subscriber, you know your preferred method of getting content. And that way, if you miss a show or if you can't make the live recording time, not to worry. You just, you've got video on demand or audio on demand for the show, and you can keep up with us at your leisure. So there's no pressure to tune in unless you want to. And then you get to see fun live stuff and before and after parts of the show. All right, Amber, before we move on, we definitely want to thank Squarespace for being a sponsor of the Social Hour. If you're not familiar with Squarespace, I can tell you firsthand, because I actually use that for my own blog at sarahlane.com, that Squarespace is the fastest and easiest way to publish a very high quality website or blog. Doesn't really have to be a blog. If you're not the kind of, you know, if you're a man or woman or dog or cat of few words, not to worry, because you can make your Squarespace blog a photo gallery, or you can import a lot of social network activity. Twitter, for example, Squarespace makes really cool widgets. If you go to squarespace.com and click on the examples tab, it gives you a really good sense of all the different looks and feels that people have achieved using Squarespace. And some of the stuff is just absolutely beautiful. I mean, not just beautiful to look at, but great information. Totally Rad Show on Revision 3, for example, they embed all of their episodes on their website. So that's another, you know, if you're fledgling podcaster, for example, it's a really good way to be able to point people to all of your episodes. I mean, it's kind of like what we do on Twit, but Squarespace is gives you another look and feel. If you're interested in trying Squarespace out, but you're not sure if you're ready to commit, then what you do is go to squarespace.com/socialhour. And if you want to sign up and just try it out, you can do that. You can try it out for, I think it's 2 weeks. It's very easy to set up. You don't have to add your credit card or any information that might make you feel kind of uncomfortable. I'm not sure what I'm doing. Squarespace will just let you try it out. Also, if you're ready to move your content over to Squarespace, and let's say you've been online for a while, maybe you've got a blog at WordPress or TypePad, and you have a lot of stuff to import, there's a great import feature that Squarespace provides. And they'll let you export as well, so they're not going to make it weird for you. Your content is your content. They know that you'll be happy, so they're not afraid to say, hey, if you don't like us, you go ahead and export out if you so desire. And they also have really, really good online customer support. So if you're not a cascading style sheet genius and you try something out and you get a little stuck or you just have some sort of a question about the back end or how do I find this feature, they've got 24-hour support. I've always had really good luck with the people who provide support there. They always get back to me with the answer in a short amount of time. So I can't speak highly enough for knowing that there's somebody on the other side who's not only willing to help you, but has the answer that you need. Squarespace.com/social hour is the URL, and we thank them so much for supporting us. I also like the team there, Amber. They're good folks. They're out in New York.
They're good people.
Yeah, they really are. They've always treated us well at Twit, so they're a great fit for us. Now, we've talked a little bit about whether the web is dead, whether it's, you know, how what's going to be the next generation of how we consume the internet. And, you know, it's an interesting question because I think you and I both agree that there's no way that the web, as far as, you know, opening up a browser and opening up your favorite tabs and interacting with folks that way is going away anytime soon. But it is interesting to see how people do... They go to Twitter a variety of different ways, for example, or Facebook, I guess. What do you think we're going to be talking about in the next 5 years? Right now, obviously, we've got all these options, but I wonder if it will go away, you know, once we get to this Steve Jobs-esque post-PC era that he's always talking about.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what's going to happen far down the road. I mean, it's hard to kind of predict 10 years out. But I think the reality is that, like you mentioned, most people are still going to be accessing websites from the comfort of their computers, from the comfort of their browsers. I mean, there's no doubt that mobile penetration and smartphone users, I mean, the numbers are just on the rise and apps are fantastic and we love them. But we just have to remember that apps usually do one simple thing and that's it, you know, one very specific thing. I think we still need the web to be able to, you know, seek out information, to search, to find various streams of content. And so I think it's a situation where all of the hype over apps has gotten people to kind of look at the web and they think, okay, well, you know, it's a dying tool, but I just don't see that happening. And I see a lot of people kind of neglecting their own websites, and I think that's a big mistake. You know, if you think of all these other social services, the reality is we don't own the content on these sites, but we do own our own content on our own website. So I think it's more important than ever to kind of nurture your own site and increase the quality of the content there. So that's kind of my opinion on it all.
No, it's a good one. I mean, you make really good points. It's true. For example, Facebook is a good example of a site that so many people are using, millions of people. They're climbing toward their 700 million user mark. But that is the Facebook experience. You know, it's free. So you're kind of the guinea pig. You know, what do they always say about Facebook? It's you're not the customer. You're the product. I mean, you are part of the product that Facebook is using to build an empire. Interesting, speaking of Facebook, an interesting story that I read on the blog Inside Facebook recently is the fact that although they're climbing towards 700 million users, that's worldwide numbers, they saw traffic drops in both the U.S. and Canada recently. And the blog Inside Facebook kind of says, listen, we use certain statistics counters to get our data, and there may have been many reasons that things fluctuated, but for whatever reason they were, even though the company gained a little over 11 million more users in the month of May, the United States lost 6 million users, Canada lost about 1.5 million. So I mean, that it's really surprised me because I guess you hear every once in a while there's some sort of Facebook revolt that people get angry about privacy settings and maybe some people cancel their accounts. But that's a lot of people, even though overall the numbers are going up. I was a little surprised to hear that in May, more than at least a million people at a time were canceling Facebook accounts in our two countries.
I would love to know a little bit more about the stats in the sense that I'd be curious about the demographics. You know, is it teenagers who have dropped off because maybe they found a hot new social network where they want to go hang out? Mm-hmm. Because I think that is pretty significant as far as trying to figure out why there was so much of a decrease. Because I just don't see it being an older generation. I mean, we've seen an increase in people 55 and older using Facebook for quite some time now. So I can only imagine that it might be younger people kind of maybe bidding farewell to the service. But there aren't a lot of stats about this on InsideFacebook.com. It's a great study, obviously, but not a ton of details about who those people are, and I'm sure that information is impossible to get.
Exactly.
Nonetheless, it's still a heck of a lot of people when you think about it. You know, in Canada, for instance, it's still half the country.
Right.
So that's pretty phenomenal with 50% penetration.
Well, and imagine we're still not talking about Facebook in China. So these very impressive 700 million user numbers, that doesn't even include China. If and when the Facebook floodgates open, I mean, the numbers, I can't even begin to imagine. I know that China, because Facebook isn't available to them right now, obviously the Chinese are social networkers and are using other services. The most popular one's name is escaping me right now. But it'll be interesting to see how many of the Chinese, and I guess it's just a matter of time, really, before they have access to Facebook, end up jumping on the bandwagon. As we've seen, too, sometimes countries that have the culture is integrated enough into another network, they don't know, it's not always as popular as you would expect it to be as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's such a beast, you know, the whole Facebook experience. It's just,
I know, it really
it's hard to try to figure out. But I mean, it's interesting to see the growth in some other countries, like, you know, in Brazil and other parts of the world where it's just Facebook has become so, or is becoming so dominant in the social networking space. Sarah, speaking of social networking, if you are a fan of Twitter and you're a Gmail user, and I don't know about you, but I fall into both of those categories, there is a new plugin, and this is put into our sort of our Spotlight app category on the show, and it is called, or sorry, social tip, Reportive for Gmail. Now, it's kind of like Zobni. If you remember, we had Jeff from Zobni on the show a little while ago, which essentially took your contact information within your Gmail account and enriched it. So there was more information provided within a pane once you were in your inbox to get people's contact info, their social networking info. This works in a similar way, except it will allow you to more easily stay on top of what people in your Twitter network are doing and actually communicate with those people while you're in your Gmail account. So a lot of commentary around this plugin. A lot of people seem to be really loving it. I haven't had a chance to try it out yet, but I love the concept, that's for sure.
I actually downloaded it. It's a nice little Chrome plugin, and it is very similar to Zobni to the point where and if everyone who's watching the video feed here, what it does is it replaces where As would be on the right-hand rail once you're inside an email. And I actually thought, ooh, I can't really show this because I don't want to show anybody's email, but I'm actually in my Social Hour account with an email that my personal account sent. So it's like, I don't mind showing you guys my information. I just didn't want to worry about anybody else's privacy who might have emailed the show. But you get an idea. So here's this is my LinkedIn picture, something that pulled from LinkedIn. Here's my current work information that I'm a host. What's interesting now, and I mean, and also assume that I would be looking at someone else's information because obviously I know all about myself. But let's say that this was Amber's inbox and she's trying to remember, how do I know Sarah? What's our connection? If you just hover over my Twitter account here, you see my latest 3-4 tweets. You can go ahead and follow my Twitter account, The Social Hour, as a Gmail account. report of notices that they don't follow Sarah Lane, the Twitter account. So you can go ahead and just follow One Easy Click. Facebook account, go ahead and add a friend. I actually did this with somebody that I thought was also already my Facebook friend when I was trying out report of earlier. And just as it would work in the web experience, it says waiting for confirmation. You know, this person will have to add you as a friend. So that worked out well. LinkedIn, PlanCast, which is a nice little plugin. And then recent mail. So this is actually comes in really handy. And this is it works a lot like Zobni works, although one of the things that I noticed that are different between the two, for anybody who's like, well, what is the difference? Zobni has kind of a tabbed experience within the widget itself where you can just click on the recent mail tab, which will open in here. If I click on recent mail in this in reportive, it'll actually dump me into as if I had done a search. So I have more of that Gmail experience. I don't really know what's better than the other. I think it's probably just a personal preference. But reportive is nice because you've got it just kind of hanging out in Gmail here. So you can go ahead and say, let's connect some social networks. I want to get more richer information on a variety of people. And I want to be able to share information. This is also not just what information is being pulled in by your contacts, but anybody else who's running this plugin will get from you. So you kind of want, the more you want to share, the better, really. I mean, as long as you want to be a social sharer. What you do have to choose between is either Zobni or Reportive, because once I installed Reportive, I actually had Zobni running, Amber, and I thought, well, how do I get this to show up? And I actually had to disable Zobni in my Chrome extension. So it's kind of one or the other, but I don't know which one's better. They seem similar. Their layout is a little bit different. They're both free, and Reportive seems, at least to me, a little bit faster at pulling in information. But I know that when we did have Jeff from Zobni on the show, we got some tweets and some emails saying, what about Reportive? Why didn't you guys cover both? And I just wasn't aware of this tool before.
Me neither.
They seem like, it, depending on what you're looking for, one of the two services would be exactly right. I mean, it's so nice to have contacts from within email, since people are, you know, more than ever complaining about email is just, there's just too much of it, and it's clunky, and it's the old way of doing things, and this at least brings in a lot more modern ways of communication into these emails that you already have to read.
Yeah, it was funny. I just went to meet someone the other day, and because I have Zobni installed, I hadn't actually met the person in person before, so I relied on a picture that I saw from their LinkedIn account that showed up within my Zobni pane in Gmail, I actually knew what they looked like before I went to hook up with them. So that was kind of a fun way that Zobni became so useful in my own life. So I think you're right. It just depends on which one you like better. They're both great, and just, you know, anything to make the inbox experience better and smarter, I think I'm a big fan of, because that's, I live in there all day, and it, you know, I just feel like it's kind of a painful place to be.
So
you get behind on emails, you might as well, you know, have some fun and spruce it up a little bit with some of these add-ons.
Absolutely agree. You know, speaking of being in Gmail, and by the way, some folks in our chat room said, well, this presumes that you use Gmail. That is true. These are Chrome plugins for the Gmail experience. Now, Zobni started with Outlook. So Zobni actually, that might be a good distinction to make for anybody who didn't see our original interview, is Zobni is a little bit more all-encompassing. Reportive for now is Gmail on top of Gmail only, and it focuses on social networks, but particularly Twitter. So that, depending on what you're looking for, definitely compare and contrast and see which one is good for you. Amber, you mentioned that it can sometimes be a painful experience to be wading through all of your emails and keeping organized. And I know that as somebody who does a lot of consulting work, you also have to keep invoicing organized, which can be a huge pain in the rear.
Yes, it can. And in Canada, the deadline for filing your taxes is June 15th. So that is just a couple of days away. And that is only if you're an independent contractor. I mentioned this on the show last week, if you run your own business. And so I recently had an opportunity to sit down with my accountant, and I was so happy to let him into my FreshBooks account and go in and check all my invoices. It looks so neat and tidy. The reality is sometimes I'm not that great at managing that stuff. But because I have logged into FreshBook and used their services pay the annual subscription, all of a sudden I look like I'm really on top of things. So that gives me huge credibility with my accountant, and we all need that, I think.
FreshBooks is awesome. Anyone who is not familiar with FreshBooks, it can be certainly free to try out, and it can actually be free forever. If you have 3 clients or less, it'll never cost you a dime. The idea with FreshBooks is to make invoicing easier, hassle-free, make you look professional. FreshBooks takes pretty much all of the guesswork out of it, and it becomes, I guess you could think of them as a bit of an accounting help of some kind anyway. If you're somebody who is a consultant, if you do a lot of freelance work, if you just did a little project for someone just once and you need to get paid, you have to invoice them. That's kind of the way that it goes. And anyone, you know, as Amber knows, once you have a few clients and you start juggling when is the deadline to get paid and did they get back to me, it starts to become a hassle, and it can be really unpleasant to remind people to pay you if they miss their deadline. And FreshBooks can handle all of that for you. I mean, you set up your clients, you can set up payment schedules, you can get hourly billing set up with FreshBooks if you're the kind of person who's wanting to get paid by the hour. If your clients prefer to pay you via PayPal or money straight into your account, if they like to go through just the old-fashioned mail, you know, if you do, that's all fine too. FreshBooks, it makes it really, really easy to work with clients who have a variety of different needs and like to do things a variety of different ways. They're awesome. And again, if you have 3 clients or less, you can use FreshBooks for free. FreshBooks.com, by the way, is the URL for anyone who's not looking at the website right now. The website's really nice. Trying it out is literally a minute long process, and you can get going. You can look professional. You can even have your company logo on your invoices. I mean, this is stuff that is really, really necessary. And of course, if you're a very successful consultant and you have lots and lots of clients, FreshBooks has very reasonable pricing plans as well. If you go to FreshBooks.com, you can learn a lot more about them. And we can't forget one of the coolest things about FreshBooks ever is that when you sign up for FreshBooks, and you can do that right now, you enter your name, your email, you say create your account, you will automatically be entered to win a birthday cake, a real birthday cake that you can eat. We actually, and it doesn't have to be your birthday, by the way. It's just this awesome birthday cake.
Cake, birthday cake anytime. That's their motto.
Yeah, I mean, they're cool. Who can't love a company who's like, hey, maybe you want to win a birthday cake just for trying out the service. We'd love to have you. Tom actually got a birthday cake because he uses FreshBooks because he does some consulting work on the side. We had it sent to Twit one day. We ate the cake. It was delicious. I mean, it was like wrapped in this box, and it kind of had this like dry ice, and it was fresh.
I love it.
And it was great. And yeah, so FreshBooks is, you can just tell they're kind of a fun company. It likes to have a little fun. But enter to win a birthday cake. Doesn't have to be your birthday. You'll be the talk
of
the town.
Can't go wrong.
Exactly.
All right, Sarah. So we have some great feedback on the show. This email is from Brian Burgess, who's the executive editor of Byte.com. He sent us an email saying that he just watched episode 11 of The Social Hour, and we did our Rad or Fad segment, one of our favorite segments on the show, mm-hmm. about those crazy video glasses, if you remember, where they would stream everything that you were watching.
Right.
So basically you'd walk around and then, you know, it would stream wirelessly to the internet. People could see whatever you were seeing. Now, we kind of wondered, we put this into sort of the fad category. Why would you ever want this? Brian came up with one reason you would. He said that I thought a cool place to use them would be at live concerts, especially if they have small condenser mics in them. So not a bad idea. And I guess one reason they could be useful. If you were at a concert and you wanted to stream that concert to your friends, then this would be rad.
Absolutely. That is a very good point, Brian. I guess sometimes we need to be reminded because we have to choose rad or fad. That's kind of the way that the game works. And both Amber and I, and a lot of people, as I recall, at least in chat, were like, oh, fad. You know, this whole life casting thing. No one needs to know that much about your life and what you're looking at. But a concert is a great example of a specific event that could be, you know, you don't have to be some sort of celebrity who you could just be anybody, and your friends who didn't get to go to the U2 concert, for example. U2 was playing in Oakland last week, and I couldn't go because I was sick. And I thought, last thing I need is to be, you know, jumping up and down at a concert. I'll only get worse. And if somebody had been able to stream the show to me, I would have really appreciated it. And if they had sunglasses, then they wouldn't have had to hold anything up. And I don't know how good the mics would be in Zion Eyes, which is the name of the glasses. But if they're decent enough, then that could be, you know, a fun experience. So
it'd be pretty cool.
Thanks to Brian for reminding us that sometimes fads can be rad in certain scenarios.
Sometimes, sir.
Sometimes. We also got a note from Twitter. It was Z-U-D Funk, F-U-N-C-K on Twitter, and posted a neat infographic, actually. Speaking of stats, you know, we talked about Facebook stats earlier in the show, on what Twitter's kind of average user looks like. And it's kind of surprising. For example, I'll just run through some of the stuff that jumped out at me. Typical Twitter user, 20-something Hispanic female. Okay. Most popular reason for using Twitter is to keep in touch with friends. That didn't surprise me too much. 72% of people use Twitter to post personal updates, but of the millions of tweets created every day, 71% produce no reaction, which means no at replies.
Sad, Sarah.
I know, it's so sad. And 0.05, so that's 1/20 of 1% of Twitter's total population are the celebrities that receive half of all the attention. There's actually a really nice infographic I'll show you guys, which is where I got this information from. I mean, there's infographics, of course, they're just kind of fun to look at. But really, it's just a way to show a lot of statistical information in a visual way. But I was really surprised. I mean, I would never want to try to guess as to why the typical Twitter user they have found is in her 20s and Hispanic. I guess I just assumed that more Twitter users were male than female. And now that I think about it, I think, well, I don't know why I thought that. Obviously, a lot of women use Twitter.
That's interesting. Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm going to have to check out. So can people who are listening to the show, can they find the infographic on Media Bistro's all Twitter? Is that an all Twitter blog?
Yeah. Media Bistro bought... it's like a collection of blogs. Like there's all Facebook, all Twitter. It's sort of a blog network that Media Bistro acquired, I think last year, maybe 2 years ago. But they're great. They're great for stuff because they're very focused. You know, all Facebook is clearly about Facebook news and, you know, and Twitter and so forth. So the blogs like that are nice because they're very focused on a certain network. So if you just want to read about Twitter, it's a nice place to go. But yes, people can certainly go to mediabistro.com/alltwitter. This was a recent article that went up over the weekend. That's why I found this. But if for whatever reason you're lost, don't worry. We will link to it on the show notes to this episode. You can go to twit.tv/TSH and then click into episode 12, our show notes, and you can find all the links to everything that we talked about, because I know it's sometimes a little bit difficult to keep up on everything that we go over. By the way, Amber knows this, but in case you don't, you can also send us voicemails as well as emails. We love all of the feedback that we get from all of you. TheSocialHour@twit.tv is our email address. Amber, what is our voicemail? I don't remember.
Our voicemail is 2626-SOCIAL.
That's right.
I love getting voicemails. It's so nice to actually hear people's voices. Not that I don't love your voice, Sarah, but it's nice to, you know, put some other people in the show. So if people want to leave us a voicemail or record us a video, you can also upload it and send us a link. But just keep the videos kind of short. You know, we talk about 30 seconds as being a good time limit for those videos. And let us know what you think of the show. Even better, share one of your favorite social sites or even a social experience that you've had, whether it's positive or negative, because those stories are always some of the best. And I'm sure a lot of our listeners can relate to many of the stories that you have. So that's how you can get in touch with us.
Absolutely. Yes. The more feedback, the better. We love to feature you guys. And at the very least, we always like to get feedback on how the show's doing, what you want to see more of, responses to our Rad or Fads, which we'll get to in a second. But first, before we get to Amber's Rad or Fad, Amber, you've kind of become the Rad or Fad picker, I guess. It's kind of like Amber.
That's good.
Amber asks, Rad or Fad? But before we get to that, we want to quickly thank Netflix. They're our third sponsor of the Social Hour today. Netflix is great. Now, I would tell you all about how Netflix works, but my guess is that many of you either already have Netflix accounts or are well-versed in the beauty that is Netflix. This is how you can get unlimited TV episodes, movies streamed instantly over the internet to your TV or your PC, your Mac, your Xbox 360, your PS3, your Wii, variety of ways. I actually stream it straight to my Sony Bravia because I have a nice little Netflix widget on my TV. But if you want to start a 1 month free trial, free. Think about that, people. Think of how many movies you could get through in a 1 month free trial. Just go to netflix.com/twit. Yeah, it's easy, very, very easy to set up. I actually just did this for a friend who was like, I don't know. I just don't know if I want to do this. I was like, listen, you try the free trial. It's like getting, you know, free money, basically, and you'll love it. I think Colin, our IT, one of our newest employees, was telling me over the weekend that Pulp Fiction got added to Netflix Instant Streaming. Yeah, which is...
That's a classic.
Talk about classic. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing is that Netflix... And by the way, for anybody who's a diehard Netflix user from back in the day, remembers that this all started with DVDs in the mail. They still do that. If you're somebody who wants DVDs in and out of the mail and that's the way that you prefer to keep track of it, not a problem. But the instant streaming collection just grows by the day. Yep, there it is, Pulp Fiction. It's new. Which is, hey, if you haven't seen it, it is... Well, it's not appropriate for all ages, but it is a wonderful movie.
That is for sure.
And it just goes to show that Netflix is, it's not only good for new releases, but for old classics. What you can do is you set up your account, and once you get going and you get familiar with kind of how the Netflix experience works, you can set up your queue, which means you just, you basically make a list of how you want your movies to be consumed online. And if you've got, if you're using the DVD option, they'll come in that order. You want to reorder, you've decided that in three movies from now, you don't want to watch Pulp Fiction. You actually want to watch 1,000 Ways to Die, some series on the Spike Network. That's cool. You just go ahead and reorder your queue, and Netflix says, yeah, it's fine. Netflix.com/twit is the URL, and we thank them so much for sponsoring this episode of TNT. Amber?
The Social Hour.
Oh, what did I say?
The TNT.
Sorry.
It's okay.
Netflix actually does sponsor TNT, too. Sorry, everybody. I'm getting my shows confused. Netflix.com/twit. Thank you for sponsoring the Social Hour.
It's okay, sir. I understand. Oh, it's a lot of shows. It's a lot of stuff that goes on.
It is.
Now we are into our Rad or Fad segment, our last little segment on the show. This week, I came across a service called SceneTap. The idea behind SceneTap is it will allow people to stream video from the bar front. And what I mean by that is that there will be streaming videos within bars that you go to, and people can check out these videos on their smartphones and just see what's happening, kind of get the general vibe of what's happening in a certain bar. If it's busy, if you want to go there, or maybe you don't like busy and you want to try somewhere else. So an interesting idea. However, there's something that made me think that streaming from the inside of a bar could be a bad thing for the people who are there, who maybe are drinking too much.
Yeah, maybe that's or the people who are there because it's empty and they want to keep it that way.
Yeah, or the people who are there who shouldn't be there and said they were going to be somewhere else. Yes. I don't know. I mean, there's a whole lot of reasons that at first it sounds kind of rad and then it slowly goes into a fad. And I'm just not sure legally how people would, I mean, I guess there's nothing you can do if I don't know. It just seems like a little sketchy.
Well, this is, I mean, so this is a, we you found this from a Mashable article. They kind of asked the question, you know, is this cool to have cameras in bars so that you can quickly say, hey, let's go down to this bar. But I hate it when it's super crowded. And, you know, if there's a baseball game and there's too many unsavory people there, let's take a look. You know, the webcam idea in public places, well, these aren't public places, I guess, but just in places that you can quickly check online isn't new. Many years ago there were surf cams. There was some of the first cameras I remember being publicly accessible, you know, if you wanted to see what the surf looked like or if the beach was crowded kind of thing. So, I mean, this idea isn't, I don't think, that offensive, but when you get into the bar aspect of it, that's where it gets a little bit tricky because, of course, people can behave badly in bars. Although, yes. I think that maybe scene tap, which is, I mean, scene tap, I guess it's playing off of the whole bar tap term, but it doesn't have to just be bars, right? I mean, it could be your favorite brunch place at 2 p.m. Sure. on a Saturday and you don't want to go if there's going to be a really long line.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that there are lots of uses for it. So, you know, it's not a new thing to really to be able to see video stream from a certain location. There was a restaurant in, I think it was in Daytona Beach, and they had a webcam within the restaurant. I used to always kind of tune in to kind of see the vibe. It was on a pier and to see how busy it was. However, it was sort of set in one area where it wouldn't really show the whole restaurant. It was just kind of one specific little view. These seem to be a little more elaborate as far as being able to check out the overall scene. But I think there are some uses for it. I just, again, when you start getting into streaming video and people's privacy, then, you know, there potentially could be people who just don't really appreciate that at all, even though we're videotaped everywhere we go when we're walking down the street. But that's not streamed live for the public.
Totally. This Mashable article also goes into the privacy issues with being able to, I mean, the idea with SceneTap is, hey, let's just take a look at the bar and see what the scene is like there. But what if something like this, a camera that's mounted above the front door, can be scanning people's faces and knowing if the technology is good enough, and this is down the road, I guess, knowing if they're under 21 or who they are. You know, was this person asked never to come back to this bar, for example, and now the camera sees them walking back in because the bartender's busy and they don't have a bouncer, that kind of thing. So that it does get into a bit of a privacy issue, but this is not going to be relegated to bars. I mean, we're going to have, if this stuff continues to be adopted in supermarkets and bars and just facial recognition in general, that's a whole nother ball game, and we'll have to figure out how comfortable we are. Yeah. In
Sarah, I just wanted to mention one thing that is kind of rad. I know it's not in the rundown, but I think I might have touched on this before on the show when we were talking about group buying services. If I hadn't, I just want to mention it quickly now. I learned about this at a conference I was at about a month ago, the idea of a group buying service in reverse. So the concept being that instead of you waiting for the deals to come to you, many of the deals aren't really relevant. This is a service that will allow you to get together. Yeah, we did talk about it, a bunch of friends, and then you say, okay, well, we all want to, you know, get tickets here. Or we all want to get this product. Yeah. I did find the name of the service because I couldn't remember. It's called UForce, and their tagline is group up and save. So I haven't tried out this particular service, but I think it's one of many that will be pretty prominent in our lives as we hear more about the idea of reverse group buying or group buying, but it's not necessarily reverse, I guess. But
is it UForce, Y-O-U, or?
U, that just did the letter U.
UForce.
I wonder you might have to just Google search it, but so UForce. You got it. So anyway, like I said, haven't tried this particular service out. Their site doesn't look overly consumer friendly, but I think it's one of many services like this that we'll hear a lot more about in the months to come.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, talk about the talk about Groupon has gotten really weird. I mean, people, I don't know how much you follow all the Groupon, you know, is it a Ponzi scheme? Is it kind of, you know, just break records, you know, sure. IPO records, that kind of thing. But it is really fascinating. People get riled up over Groupon services, which, I mean, at their very essence, it's very easy. I guess for me, I kind of have to laugh about it because it's like, I mean, no one's putting my hand to the fire and saying, you have to buy this because you're going to save money kind of thing. It's like, you participate if you want to. But I do see why it's a hot topic because, you know, they've made so much money in a short period of time and growing so fast. But then you've got local merchants who sometimes aren't happy with the relationship.
Yeah.
And I don't know. It's just it's interesting to see how services like UForce, I found their Facebook page anyway, can become competitors by offering something different, you know, a different experience overall.
Yeah, I know. It's So I think that could be a popular trend to keep an eye out for. Could be rad. It's not officially rad yet, but it could be, Sarah.
It could be.
There's potential.
Yeah. If anyone is familiar with UForce, definitely let us know or considering trying it out or anything in between. But for now, Amber, that is our show. We went over an hour, but not too far. So good work. Ish.
Pretty good. We were pretty close to an hour. Yeah, not too bad.
I think so. Yeah. And thanks so much for rushing back from one of your many other jobs to do the show. And I'm glad that you got back in one piece.
It's always a pleasure, Sarah. And I'll catch up with you offline about I'm going to be in San Francisco next week.
Yay!
Very briefly. But I got to try to get up to the cottage. So I'll bug you offline about that.
please do. In the meantime, we will shoot our show next Monday. Same time, same place. That's 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern for the social hour. Thanks to everybody who participated, watching us live and participating in chat. And everybody else, well, you're listening to us later. So thanks for doing that, too. All right, Amber, until next time, have a good week.
Bye, Sarah.
See you on the internet. Bye.